Well, good evening and welcome, friends, to Voices of the Sacred Feminine, whether you're across town or across the globe. That snippet opening today's show is from the single Tharsis by Son of the Widow. And hey, if you're in Southern California, I wonder if you heard about my big party at the Goddess Temple of Orange County this Saturday. I'm giving a presentation on Washington, D.C. as a sacred site of Goddess and talking about my new book, Goddess Calling, Inspirational Messages and Meditations of Sacred Feminine Liberation Theology. And it's going to be a very interactive night. We have one of our guests on tonight's show, internationally known drummer Rowan Storm. She'll be leading drumming and rhythm. We're going to be teaching chants, storytelling, all working toward community solidarity and partnership, those ideals of the sacred feminine. And you know what? It's all free, free, free. And if you can't come this Saturday, but do you still want to know more about this idea I have of Washington, D.C. as a sacred site of Goddess, I'm giving a presentation in Malibu next Saturday. It's actually a more extensive presentation than this weekend on the sacred sites part of the presentation without the drumming, dancing, chanting. It's more of a workshop with a mini ritual. So if you'd like to come to either, go to my Facebook page, and if you can't find the info there, leave me a message. I'll be sure to get you everything you need to attend. So this Saturday in Irvine and next Saturday in Malibu. And another opportunity, if you're in Southern California, next Tuesday at Temple of the Arts in Los Angeles, foremother and feminist Phyllis Chesler will be talking about her newest book, An American Bride in Kabul. That's Afghanistan, if Kabul doesn't ring a bell. Yes, Phyllis was the subject of the title of that book in her early years, An American Bride in Kabul. And I kind of get the idea she started learning about women's inhumanity to women while there, which is the title of the book you might know her by. It's going to be a very interesting talk, and I believe that's free as well. So that's next Tuesday, Temple of the Arts in Los Angeles. They have a website. You can go there and get all the information you need. Then on the 27th of April, I'm going to be a guest ministering at the Goddess Temple of Orange County on the topic of forgiveness. A difficult thing to do sometimes, for sure. Hopefully I can shed some light on how to cultivate that ability. Okay, so turning my attention to tonight's show, first up, Kathy Pagano is going to tell us about what the cosmos has going on during this intense month of April. We just had that beautiful blood moon early Tuesday morning, Monday night. Some are calling it the Sekhmet moon because it's such a time for transformation, and I'm sure Kathy will tell us more about that. Then, as I mentioned in the opening, internationally recognized Middle Eastern drumming expert and educator Rowan Storm is with us, and we're going to be chatting about her pioneering drumming method, her experiences working with groups in the Middle East, and how her new drumming modality balances the left and the bright brain. So don't go away. All right. Kathy, welcome to the show.
Thank you. How are you tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. We got up, we didn't go to bed, actually. We stayed up late to watch the beautiful blood moon. We kept watching it online because Griffith Observatory had it streaming live, and then we'd go to the roof of my apartment complex, and my husband took some great pictures. It was pretty awesome, but aside from it being really beautiful and, you know, an event that doesn't happen very often, what else do we need to know about it?
Well, I think the first thing is that we don't go out often enough and look at the night sky. And it is beautiful, and it is full of mystery. And so it's so important that so many people actually went out and watched it. And it takes quite a while, doesn't it? It's not
a thing
like a solar eclipse, which is coming up in a couple of weeks. And it's something that's very slow and mysterious. And I don't know if you had any birds singing, but during the eclipse, the birds would sing, and then when it got full, they all stopped.
Oh.
And then it went on again. Nature sort of holds its breath, I think, for a moment there.
Interesting.
So, Yeah, this is the first of four total lunar eclipses that are going to occur this year and next year. They're not so, they're not totally rare, but having four in a row are. And I think I read someplace that the last time they happened was in the 60s, which I had a good chuckle over because that's where all of our issues today arise from, as we've talked about the last few times I've been on. And so, as everyone probably read, the reason it's blood red is because of our atmosphere, all of the sunrises and sunset colors, because of the pollution in our atmosphere, but also just the way the light reflects off of it. But there's a lot of myths around it and legends, usually bad ones, such as the overthrow of the king and things like that. You know, usually in the ancient times, astrologers really just looked at the kings, the rulers of the country or countries. They weren't as concerned with individuals. But for individuals, for each of us, it really has to do with the end of some old way of perceiving the world that has to do with us and me and you. The whole idea of do I go this alone or do I partner up? And because patriarchy has, especially in America, has so brainwashed us into thinking we have to go it alone, that I think it's time for us to switch, because we don't, anytime we partner up with anyone, we create space between ourselves and our thoughts and our actions. And when we take a partner into consideration, whether in a love relationship or just in a friendship relationship or a business relationship, you can play ball. There's space. You can talk things back and forth, and you create something bigger. And I think that's really what the eclipse is about. A lunar eclipse is about becoming aware of some emotional, some story, some emotional need that we have that we've kept buried for a long time. And probably the last 19 years, usually eclipses occur in 19-year patterns. Eclipses in the same area of the zodiac. There are eclipses every year, even though you might not see them in our part of the world. They're occurring someplace. There's always four eclipses, at least sometimes five, and even sometimes six in a year. But when it occurs over America like that, it's really telling, you know, over the Western Hemisphere, it's really, to me, it's saying, the cosmos is saying to us, look, all of you rugged individuals, maybe it's time for you to think about other people and maybe partner up with other people.
Now,
because
Kathy,
the signs of Aries and Libra. Go ahead.
Now, let me ask you this, and maybe I misunderstood, or maybe you can shed light on it, because I did actually understand what I read. But is there something unique about the one this week? I thought I read something about it won't happen again. Something isn't going to happen again for hundreds of years or something. Does that sound familiar?
It might not be. It might be that it won't happen again during this this holy week of Easter and Passover.
Okay. All right.
Which of course has a lot of Christians, unconscious flat Earth Christians, going, "Oh my God, it's the end times," because it's happening during Holy Week. But unfortunately, they really don't understand their own religion very well, I guess. I don't know if you saw the movie Noah, but it's a beautiful mythic story. And
yes,
I hear a lot of Christians are complaining, it's not like the Bible. Well, yeah, it is and it isn't.
Well, yeah, I did go see it, and I have to admit, one of the reasons I went for several reasons. I know he's a crazy guy, but I like Russell Crowe ever since I saw him play in that movie. You know, where he was the Roman centurion. I'm trying to remember
Gladiator.
The name.
Yeah.
Gladiator. I loved him in that.
Yeah.
I cried my eyes out. But then also too, because the Christians were so up in arms, I had to go see what all the humbug was about. And I thought it was very shamanistic, and very magical. And Anthony Hopkins,
yes.
Actually, what was interesting to me, Anthony Hopkins seemed to be the most magical one because he was
yes.
the one who gave Noah the seed to grow the trees to build the ark, and he's also the one that made the barren woman fertile. And,
yes.
You know, it felt like, you know, there should have been more, you know, was he really God in a way? You know, was he the creative force?
He was Methuselah, which is a very ancient figure in the Bible. And we don't really know much about him, just like Enoch. But the thing that was amazing was that they were descended from Adam and Eve. They weren't Jewish. They weren't Christian. They were direct descendants of the caretakers of the garden. And that's really, you know, they play, and Russell Crowe and Noah played like an environmentalist. And it was so interesting because to me, because it was really a story about remembering what a good father was. Not about, you know, because fathers are there to protect us and to form a bridge, at least psychologically that's what the father does, form a bridge to the world. And because he saw evil in the world, he decided everyone should die. And he didn't listen to the women. But the fascinating part is their shamanistic heritage came from the snake in the garden. So they were very goddess-oriented, very earth-oriented, and very feminine-oriented, because when he used the snake skin that the snake had shed from the Garden in Eden, he put it on his left hand, the feminine hand, and he blessed with the left hand. And he also said that it was Adam that caused the trouble in paradise, not Eve, which I really liked. But Darren Aronofsky is a wonderfully mythic director. But anyway, to get back to where the cosmic story, if people out there listening, I would recommend you going. It's a wonderful movie. And because it is about the end of time and the new beginning. And this is a myth that's been percolating in the unconscious of Western society for so long. And it really is up now. Not that it's going to appear the way most people think. It's either the New Agers with the 2012 or the Christians. But we are in this big shift, and that shows in the heavens. This week, we talked about it last time. In the 60s, two planets came together, the planet of evolution and the planet of revolution, as if it was the new moon. And now they're in a square, a 90-degree angle, which is about overcoming obstacles. And it's all about us planting the seeds of a new society. And we're going through this square 7 times, which is unheard of. And this was the fifth one is coming up on Monday. But it's also adding two other planets to the mix and forming a cross, which will turn things around. And so we do see a lot of disruption. Karen, you had mentioned a friend of yours doing an oracle reading or something, a channeling, and thinking that war might come. And of course, that's the easy way out. Let's all go to war because there's a lot of tense energy. But there's so much promise in the cosmic story about us taking a stand for what's true and good, and in a way, what the goddess wants us to do. And starting to go out into our society and make much-needed changes there, being agents of change, as my friend Carolyn Casey says, being visionary activists, bringing the vision of the story into the world, because all too many people have that negative story about, oh, we're about to be punished, or at least you are, and we're going to be saved.
You know, I keep saying... I keep saying, let that rapture come and take all of those people away so that we can start living right and taking care of the earth.
That's right. Well, you know, the unfortunate part is they're not going to be saved. They're going to probably become a beetle, not the good singing group kind of beetle. But, you know, they're probably going to have to go back to the evolutionary beginning and start again to realize what it means to be human. The beautiful part, and then I'll not talk about it, about Noah is the whole story was about who are we to judge who's good and evil? And listen to the feminine. That was the other good part of the story. But, you know, when we connect to the divine, I think men have a harder time understanding how to do that. And their ego gets in the way. And I think that was beautifully shown in the movie. Whereas a lot of times, I'm not saying women don't, because women's cruelty to women, we do it too, but when we really connect to the goddess, we just know what the right thing to do is. It's life. is no question. Whatever brings forth life and goodness and love, you know, is always the answer. And
right.
And that's what we want to bring into the world. So we need to add our vision, and that's why the cosmic story right now is so amazingly beautiful, because it is forming a cross in the sky, and it is saying to us, if you turn this cosmic cross, you can change the world. It just incarnate these energies in the most positive way. So if you feel, which could be because it is a very tense aspect. It's not like, oh, good fairies are sprinkling us with fairy dust and glitter. No, it's a hard aspect, okay? Four giant titanic powers standing at four corners of a cross. And, you know, they can either fight it out or they can work together. But if we try to remember that we in center and that we are the goddess light in the world, then we meet, you know, fear and anger with a different reality, which doesn't mean being, you know, stepping back and being walked on, but just standing up for what's true and right in a positive way. I think we'll get through this time. I really do.
So, Kathy,
the other thing that's going on in the cosmic story, you see there's personal planets, which is Venus and the Sun and Moon and Mercury and Mars, and they describe our personal relationship to the cosmos, how we use certain energies, our desires, our love nature, the way we communicate, our sense of self, our imagination about the world. But then we have the outer planets, and they're about big cultural movements. And so we have Pluto about evolution, demolishing the patriarchal structure of our society that no longer is viable. And then we have Uranus, the planet of awakening in the sign of Aries, which is all about the question of who am I and what am I here on Earth to do, and asking us to take on a bigger and newer identity. But then we have Neptune, the planet of spirituality and imagination, in its own sign of Pisces, the ocean, the collective unconscious, and along with Chiron, the healer, and Venus, love and compassion. And it's saying, let go of our old imagination of what the world is like. Give birth to new images and new stories and new possibilities. So we can go into fear, or we can face our death, which, like Carlos Castaneda learned from Don Juan many, many decades ago, if you read those books, the Carlos Castaneda books. But, you know, take death as your advisor. Be strong, be brave, be lovely, be graceful, dance, and dance with the energies. And Neptune says, believe in what you're imagining. And the more that you believe, the more we can bring it into the world. So that's a pretty good story to be having up there in the skies right now.
Oh, I think so, and it's such a positive spin on it. You know, as I'm hearing you talk, you know, I have this phrase that I say all the time, you know, we have to be her sacred roar. You know, we're her hands, we're her feet, we're her mouth, we're, you know, we reflect her consciousness. And, I'm hearing you say that, I think, using other words. You know, we just have to step up and have the certainty, have faith, if you want to call it, the courage, the strength to be what we know she wants us to be, and sort of just, you know, shake off what has been, you know, because we all know it doesn't work for the most of us. So why you know, why keep playing that story over and over again? You know, let's find the new normal.
That's right. There's so many possibilities in the world if we step outside the box of how we've been culturally conditioned.
Right.
And you know, so why not? All, you know, was it Dionne Fortune who said all women are priestesses?
Mm-hmm, I think.
In some of her novels, like The Sea Priestess and Moon Magic, but there's this sense of Uranus and Aries is saying to us, who are you? Like the hookah-smoking caterpillar, who are you? And you might, you know, we might be able to say, well, I'm a priestess of Sekhmet. I am in reality, but also, wow, what does that mean? What would it mean if I stepped into that again? Probably we were, you know, those of us who were priestesses back in ancient times are being called to remember those things. And those of us who were healers and herb wives and good witches and midwives, and we need to remember that we walked with power at a certain point, and it wasn't about power over other people, but power within each of us. So why not take on that identity again? I think that sometimes that the masculine consciousness, I'm not talking only about men because we women have been trained in it too, we take it to our ego and then we think, I am powerful, rather than I am a vessel of power. And
right.
So like the goddess would say, shake off the old story, shake off all of that encumbrance, and the heavens are telling us this is a transformative time. Are we going to sit back and just watch it happen and let everything fall apart? Because sometimes when you read the news, I don't know about you, Karen, but I sit there and think, oh, my goddess, what are they doing now?
Yep.
And then I go, well, you know what? Whatever they're doing, that's their story, but I'm going to go out and be the priestess that I've been asked to be. And
absolutely.
That can create a lot of ripples in the universe, I think.
I interviewed Ann Baring recently, foremother, written a number of books. She has a brand new book out called The Dream of the Cosmos, A Quest for the Soul, and she was talking about the feminine, and it was beautiful because one of the things she said made me feel so good, because, sometimes people want to say the universal consciousness is indifferent, it's detached from us, but, she said that she really believes the feminine consciousness is trying very hard right now to help us. And I think that's reflected in everything you've just said, that's happening, how all the planets are aligning.
Right. Well, if you know the goddess, she's always there at death and birth, isn't she? She's
mm-hmm.
the great transformer. And if we even want to look at the Christian end time story, which I talk about in the book I wrote, the one thing that these crazy Christians, sorry, but some of you are, forget to look at is in the book of Revelations, the whole story changes when they talk about the woman clothed with the sun, standing on the moon, crowned with stars, giving birth to the Savior. And that's the goddess who returns at the turning of the ages and gives birth to a new identity for all of us, a new culture. And that's wisdom. And, because she understands the moon, she stands on the moon, and she knows her spiritual values. She's crowned with stars, but she's conscious and self-aware. She's clothed with the sun. So she's the cosmic woman, but she's a woman. She's not a goddess. So it's a call for all women right now at this point, whether you want to see it as the Kali Yoga ending or the end of the Mayan calendar or the Christian end time story. But we are at the end of a 26,000-year-old cycle. And so it is a new story that wants to be birthed. And it's the central figure is the goddess or women. So it's about us taking, we women being strong and taking up our part in the story, which is stop it, people. Stop going to war.
Take on that mantle. Don't wait for somebody to invite you to. You just step up,
Right.
Step up and take it. Well, Kathy, beautiful words tonight, and I know you have a class you have to get to. So just real quickly, and in maybe a minute or two at most, is there anything we should expect to feel next week with this, powerful stuff happening around Monday or Tuesday?
Right. Well, on Easter, on Sunday, the three of the four planets click in. We call it perfecting, but they kind of click in exactly. 1, 2, 3. So Sunday, try to stay calm. Okay. Bring the goddess force in. Be loving. And other people when people are unconscious, the energies sort of affect them. But if we can channel the energies of change and transformation and bringing the love of family and mothering and nurturing into place in those situations, that we can bring and be the calm center, if you will. We can settle people down. On Monday, just be careful. Uranus-Pluto squares can be very alarming, like just people driving crazy or people, going a little crazy, because energy affects us. Earth Day is Tuesday. Let's pray that if there are protests, that we don't have you know, the federal government and the army come in and hurt anybody. That might be part of the Civil War, your friend with the Oracle said, because as I mentioned last time, all of this is also affecting America very big time. It's right on America's sun, and we have a sun square Saturn in our 4th of July birth chart, because countries have birth charts too. And so our image of ourselves needs to change. We need to mature. And we can't be any kind of leader unless we can grow up and lead ourselves. And so this big question will be with us until at least next March and then into the 2022, 2023, because there's a lot of stuff going on which we can talk about another time. So just be aware, okay? Be gracious. Be loving. Be in the feminine side of yourself, I would say, rather than the left-brain masculine side. And I'm sorry I'm going to miss the drumming, because I love it when we put our both brains together, because that's when things really click.
Well, you can listen from the archives.
Afterwards, yes.
And if we see you...
I'm going off to my dream class now, so I'll go into the dream world. Maybe we'll hear it.
All right. Thank you so much, Kathy. It was a wonderful show tonight. I sure appreciate it.
Okay. And thank
Bye-bye.
You, and I'll see you Saturday. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Well, what a lovely difference that is, you know, how we can look at what's going on in the world right now. Thank you so much, Kathy. Well, we are about ready to cross the threshold. Yep, that's what that means, and to the next part of the show, and I want to say hello to Rowan. Hi, Rowan.
Hi, Karen.
Well, let me introduce you to my listeners, remind them who you are, and then we're going to jump into our conversation. So, listeners, we have Rowan Storm with us. She is an internationally recognized Middle Eastern drumming expert. She's an educator, a drum circle facilitator, and frame drum designer for Remo and Cooperman Drum Companies. Rowan is pioneering a symmetrical teaching method which balances both brain hemispheres while developing rapid hand drumming proficiency. So we're going to talk a little bit about that and her experiences with groups in the Middle East and, you know, all of this research that she's been doing, which is very, very interesting. And if you're lucky enough to be coming to the party on Saturday, you'll actually get to meet Rowan in person and experience, you know, this wonderful method of hers that everyone will be introduced to. So, Rowan, hi.
Yes, hi. Great to be here. I caught the tail end of your conversation with Kathy, I believe is her name, right?
Yes, yes.
Yes, that was really very interesting.
So, well, yeah, she's great. She's new to the show, and I, you know, be getting such great feedback, and you know, it feels like, you know, so many of us. I mean, we've been talking about balancing the left and the right for a really long time, but in a way, I feel like maybe some of us, you know, we talked it, but we didn't really. You know, it was kind of like we didn't really know how to walk that talk, you know. But it was so interesting when you started, you know, when we met and we started chatting about collaborating on this, you know, event, you know, kind of partnering to give the community a wonderful experience. And then you come up and say, well, you know, I'm starting a whole new modality that, you know, that those ideas sort of play into. So did you want to tell listeners, you know, well, first of all, for non-drummers, you know, why this is unique and, you know, and why it's so much better?
Well, yes. My background is traditional Middle Eastern hand drumming, and I've been doing that for many decades. And, you know, after a certain point, I realized that I was feeling extremely lopsided because I'm a very right-handed person, and all of Middle Eastern hand drumming and really all of life is we approach with our leading hand, our dominant hand, or the hand with which we write. That is kind of the way that I'm using that term, dominant, means the hand that we normally use to write, because there really are all degrees of handedness in the human domain. Some people have certain things that they do with one hand and some things that they do with the other. But I was feeling very lopsided, and not only is Middle Eastern drumming using the dominant hand twice as much often than the non-dominant hand, because there are three basic strokes in all of Middle Eastern hand drumming, ranging all the way from the Western Mediterranean, Morocco, and even Southern Europe, going all the way into India and everywhere in between. Imagine that entire range of geography is formed, and the rhythmic language and the melodies and so much is influenced by the fact that there are three basic strokes in all Middle Eastern drumming. There's one bass stroke created by the dominant hand and a treble stroke, and the non-dominant hand typically plays only one treble stroke. So that's kind of amazing right there, that you've got this quite dramatic inequality of use of the hands. And then a little bit later, I'd like to just mention about how we do that in normal life as well. So anyway, there I was in Athens, Greece, where I have a relationship for many long years, and I started working on my non-dominant hand to see what I could do with it, and it was really quite amazing that I couldn't do very much with it. I would sit down and kind of do something with my dominant hand and then try to copy exactly that movement with my non-dominant hand, and I could barely make a sound at all. It was really quite dramatic.
Because your non-dominant hand wasn't strong enough, is that you didn't have the strength to hit the drum with the same strength?
Yes, I believe that it's not only a muscular strength, but it's also a consciousness. Because now I want to switch over into ordinary life. And you mentioned before that this thing about balancing both brain hemispheres seems to be really quite a popular concept these days, and I guess it has been for a long time. But really, I don't really know what that means. When most people talk about that, I don't know how they are going about what they're doing, other than using a flashy catchphrase that maybe is going to get people's attention. Because the fact is that we live our lives with one hand, but most of us do. Some people are ambidextrous, and some people have more of a developed sense of balance, balanced use of each of both of their hands in life. But let's face it, we are creatures of habit. I go to the door, and I will automatically use my right hand to open the door, to pick up a drink, to drink it, to brush my teeth, to write, to carry my bag, to carry whatever. I mean, we just automatically go there without thinking about it. So that was really something to kind of deal with, as Gurdjieff calls it, the horror of the situation, to know, to recognize how mechanical we are and how little we exercise free will. So that brings me, to just suggest and to offer the listener the challenge and the question to see if, A, you can remember to use your non-dominant hand in every aspect of ordinary life, and then to do so, because we're automatic. We get to the other side of town. We don't even remember anything like opening the door or taking out the keys for the car or anything. We're creatures of habit, and we just, operate by this mechanical kind of code. So that's the first thing I ask my students to do, is just be aware. Be aware of how it is that you move about your ordinary day, and then try to use your non-dominant hand in every aspect. Because the more that we use our non-dominant hand, the more it's going to wake up, the corresponding brain hemisphere. And that is why this, this is a practice. I feel like my drumming activities really are a spiritual practice. And they are about waking up. They are about delving deep into my deep unconscious and raising up my awareness high. And you know, that's about moment to moment to moment to moment to moment awareness.
Right, right. Well, and it feels like to me you're giving us another tool to help us tap into that a little bit.
You know, exactly. And there have been other people who have written about this. For example, Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain by Betty Edwards. That was a book that came out quite a while ago. And she talks about this in a very interesting way. And there's another book called The Power of Your Other Hand. I forget who the author is, but she talks about writing with your non-dominant hand. So now I'm talking about drumming with your non-dominant hand and all of what those two other authors have to say, and other things too. I've researched a lot about the use of the brain and this the different capacities that are associated with each side of the brain hemisphere. And there is just a remarkable consensus that that the right brain hemisphere is associated with the left hand, and that is associated with abstract thinking and feeling and intuition and subjective insight, and the dominant hand, the left side of the brain is about linear thinking and about intellect and objective analysis. And so the thing is, this drumming that I've developed with my symmetrical frame drum, for the listeners who may not be aware of what a frame drum is, although you probably do because you're probably aware of Lane Redman's very significant contribution to the field of frame drumming. But a frame, like a tambourine, is the most well-known member of the frame drum family in the Western world. But there are many, many, many kinds of frame drums. Just think about it. A round cake pan. That's the basic concept. And then you've got jingles like a tambourine. You've got rings around the inside. You've got strings stretched across the inside of the skin. You've got all just a remarkable variety of different kinds of frame drums from different regions. And so the traditional frame drum and traditional other kinds of drums as well have always, for thousands of years, been made out of natural materials. The frame is typically made from wood. And in order to resist the tendency to warp when you attach a skin on there and you stretch it tight, in order to resist that tendency for the drum to turn into a potato chip, you have to have a very wide frame. Otherwise, if it's a thin frame, it'll just go boink, and it will be a potato chip. So thanks to Remo's materials, Remo is a drum company located in Los Angeles area, and it's one of the biggest drum companies in the world. And Remo became really broke the code for drummers, because all along, forever, drummers always had this thing that they had to deal with about natural animal skins tend to get very soggy in humid weather, so it will just be useless. If you've got a drum in one kind of location, then you take it into a damp rainforest or something like that. I mean, just imagine trying to play a drum on a big noodle. I mean,
right,
that's about
right.
The kind of sound you're going to get, right? So Remo revolutionized the whole world of drumming by coming up with the synthetic drum head. And that was a huge contribution to the world of drumming. And also the frames of Remo's drums are also, the shells and the frames of their drums are also synthetic. So now we don't have those same limitations that we do have with the natural materials. So back in the middle 90s, there I was in Athens dreaming about trying to have a drum that I could play symmetrically, but there wasn't any frame drum around that had a narrow enough frame that I could hold equally with both hands, because the traditional way of playing a frame drum, you hold the weight of the drum in your non-dominant hand, and you play the two strokes that I mentioned earlier, the doom, which is the bass stroke, and the tek, which is the treble stroke with the dominant hand, while you hold the drum with your non-dominant hand. And it could just hold the drum, and sometimes it does make one treble stroke. So that is the conundrum that we've been dealing with for thousands of years. And so this drum, and because Remo's synthetic materials, now we have this thin line frame drum that I designed, and It is revolutionary. I will say this here, if anybody wants to challenge me on that, I'm available to discuss it. But the tambourine was a radical drum that was invented about 2,000 years ago. And I believe that the slimline frame drum and the symmetrical way of playing a frame drum is the most radical thing that's happened in the world of frame drums for 2,000 years, largely because of Remo's synthetic materials and because of my decades of playing in an asymmetrical fashion and just feeling totally lopsided and out of whack. So as I started developing my non-dominant hand, I did have one kind of narrow frame drum in Athens at that time in the middle 90s. So I just tried to hold it symmetrically, and I would do the movement with my right hand that I knew so well, and then I would just try to mirror it exactly with my non-dominant hand, and it was really difficult. It took me a long time to be able to duplicate the sound and to feel comfortable enough. But through that mirroring process, it was just an extraordinary passage. I would call it a rite of passage that took place over several months. And through that process, I would feel kind of dizzy is too strong a word, but I would feel disoriented. The more I used my non-dominant hand, I would have this strange feeling of kind of, I don't know, disorientedness. And then I would see this image behind my eyelids, which was like two hands with the fingers rotating out, sort of like a yin-yang sign. On one side was a white hand on a black background, and on the other side, the black hand with a white background. And then that image would flip around. And so this is the image that I would see. And then I actually, my first signature drum was created by Cooperman Company, which is a handmade, they make very high-level artist drums. They're all handcrafted, and they're just extraordinary workmanship and everything like that. And that was my first drum. And they asked me if I had a logo, and I said, well, I've got this weird thing I see behind my eyelids, so that's become my logo.
Wow, isn't that interesting? What a great story.
Yeah, it is really interesting. I mean, I could just rattle on about this.
Well, let me ask you a few questions, and you know, forgive me because you know, I'm not a drummer yet. I had a wonderful time at your drum class a few weeks ago, and I aspire to find more time to learn to be a better drummer. But one thing I have noticed from going to rituals where we've had wonderful drummers is the drumming really, I think, speaks to your primal mind. Is that my imagination, or is that kind of a fact that drummers just know?
I think it is a fact. It has been shown that, first of all, group drumming increases your immune system. There have been many studies that have shown that very, very clearly. And also, my own feeling about that is that pulse is really the essential material or the essential element of the universe, if you think of it that way. Vibration. Everything is vibration. Everything. The physical world, your consciousness, your thinking, everything is made up of vibration. And at different rates of repetition. So the physical world is a very gross and very slow rate of vibration, and that's why we have the physical world. And as the vibration gets faster and faster and faster, then it goes into the non-visible world. But everything is vibration. So I feel that the enormously powerful attraction to drumming that pretty much everybody in the world feels, whether or not they act on it is another question. But, you know, drumming just gets people to stop in their tracks. And I believe that what that is that somehow it is in our primal sense, it is an aspiration towards merging and being in touch with that vibration of the universe, the pulse of the creative force of the universe.
Well, I know we all react to things differently, and different things work, you know, for all of us, you know, to certain extents. And, you know, we all have, you know, our favorite way to do ritual, to drum, to, you know, maybe do trance work. But it seems like to me that there's something about drumming that really sort of enhances your ability to go within, you know, to do that trance work. Now, see, my husband is different. Drumming agitates him. But I don't know, I feel like maybe he hasn't given it a chance, you know. But you know, and I don't know why that is for him, you know. But for me, it's always felt like, you know, if I could just do it long enough and make the time to be committed to it, you know, my experience with it in ritual has been that I've always had the deepest ritual experiences when there was drumming or moving, sort of a moving meditation while drummers drummed, you know, kind of a thing. It just feels like it's, this might sound silly the way I'm going to say it, but part of the mystery. You know, and maybe I'm using different words to say what you just said, but it's almost as if it's a, you know, it helps us connect to the forces of nature on some level. You know, I don't know, just makes us feel connected to each other, to the earth, to our history, to our ability to, you know, work together. And that was one of the reasons I was so excited about you wanting to be part of the party on Saturday, because for me, I think a drum circle is a perfect example of the beauty of not just maybe balancing the left and right brain or feminine and masculine, but I think it shows us how we can have the faith, the certainty to live in the feminine. And now this all might sound crazy, and my listeners out there are going to say, oh, Karen went off the deep end. But, you know, I look at a drumming circle, and I think of it like this. I think of the people who come to the drum circle. They're all very individual. They come to a drum circle. There's no script. There's no music. Everybody sort of comes with their own point of reference, their own experience, their own abilities, and they all sit down and they start to hit that drum. And in the beginning, it sort of sounds like chaos, but it's almost as if magically something beautiful begins to form, you know, because we listen to one another and we sort of pick up on somebody else's beat and maybe they pick up on ours. And it's this collaboration that happens, you know, and it's this partnership, it's this negotiation that turns into a beautiful thing in the end, you know, and yes. I don't know, I probably sound like I'm nuts, but that's how I think of a drum circle. And to me, that is the sacred feminine.
I'm sorry, what was the last thing you said?
I said, and to me, you see, that act, that process, that is the sacred feminine, and it's sort of, I think, what we're being called to do today, to have that trust, to come together, to listen to one another, to weave in and out, to dance, to, you know, to listen to one another, to figure out how to negotiate, collaborate, be a tribe, be a collective. It's no more this rugged individualism stuff. It's about the we and the us. You know, not the I and the me. And I feel like the drum circle is sort of a symbol of that or a metaphor for it, or it sort of represents how we have to be as a people.
Yes,
and,
absolutely.
And, you know, maybe I'm just nuts.
No, you're not nuts. I mean, unless I'm nuts too. I'm very fortunate that I've been able to study drum circle facilitation with someone who I believe has been the major innovator of the facilitated drum circle, who is Arthur Hall. He's a guy, he was a hippie, you know, banging on stuff back in the 60s. He's from Santa Cruz, California. And after a while, he started realizing that things were a little bit chaotic and that most of the people at the drum circles were men, and that they just wanted to kind of show off and play as loud as they could so that they could be heard. And he realized, well, gosh, you know, maybe there's something else going, maybe there's another possibility here. So slowly, slowly, he started going into the center of the circle and bringing people back into the groove and kind of asking people to, you know, playing games with people to get them really bonded as a community. So he has really done remarkable work, and I'm very fortunate that I've been able to study with him for the last several years, and because my background is Middle Eastern drumming, and I have spent decades studying the intricacies of particular rhythm patterns and dance that goes with it, and the cultural context where they came from. And this is very, very wonderful, and I know this is my life's passion, and that's very exclusive. And the opposite is true of the facilitated drum circle. Absolutely everyone is welcome, and everyone has rhythm. If you've got a heart and if you're alive, you've got rhythm. And I think one of the things that I've noticed in Western culture with my students is that many people in the Western world grow up with this concept that, oh, I can't do it, and because maybe you were banging on the table or doing something like that, and your mother when you were a child said, don't do that, don't make noise, and everything like that. So, you know, many people grow up with this very kind of compressed and squashed sense of their ability to be a rhythmic being. And one of the greatest joys I could ever imagine experiencing in my life is being in a drum circle, whether I'm leading it or not. Watching the faces of the people, it's like they come alive. It's like, oh, wow, I can do this. I can do this. I can really do this. And so, as you mentioned earlier about in the beginning, sometimes maybe it's a little bit chaotic as people kind of, you know, shuffle around and deal with their belief systems that they can't, and move through that to a point that they realize that they can and they become empowered. Towards the end of a drum circle with absolute beginners, and they could be all ages, little old ladies, little old men, and kids, and everybody together, languages and cultures, and you don't need a verbal language to do this. It's so primal. And at the end of a drum circle, you would be astonished at the beautiful music that can be created by complete beginners when they kind of surrender to their own ability and their own natural rhythmic voice. And listen, and listening is a big part of it as well. You need to listen to be a community. You need, everybody has a voice. Everybody's voice is important, and everybody's voice gets to get heard in a drum circle. And that it's just so gratifying and so exciting. And I'm very, very, this is a very powerful thing. And I can't imagine a more powerful way to bring people together on this planet than the facilitated drum circle.
Absolutely. Well, and I want to make sure you tell listeners about the GYN, the G-Y-N.
Yes, I would love to share about that. Thank you for asking. The three strokes of Middle Eastern drumming that I mentioned earlier are Doom, which is the bass stroke with the dominant hand, and it sounds like a bass stroke, right? Doom. And Tek is the treble stroke with the dominant hand, and Ka is the treble stroke with the non-dominant. These syllables, by the way, are not 100% universal. So there may be drum teachers who have a different way of naming the strokes, but this is how I name them, and from my teachers and my teachers' teachers and everything like that. In my lineage, that's how I was taught to refer to them. And there is no name for the bass stroke with the non-dominant hand, simply because it's not done. I mean, it may be done very, you know, incidentally, but it's so incidental that there has never been a name for it before. So once I developed more of the symmetrical playing and the thin line frame drum, and also my Diary, which is the other frame drum that I designed for Cooperman, which is now also produced by Remo, that I want both of those, both of my drum designs have very narrow frames so that you can hold them symmetrically, and you can get the Doom with the dominant hand, and you can also now get the bass stroke with the non-dominant hand. So I was looking for a name for that stroke, and I wanted it to be somehow balanced with the sound Doom. It needed to have a phonetic value that resembled a bass stroke, So I was looking around and I came up with some things and they were okay, but didn't really work. And then I made my videos, which people can look at on my website, rowanstorm.com, and I have a couple of lessons on there. So I came up with this stroke called Gien. I was questioning what the Africans use, and they say Dune and Goon, but they didn't have enough phonetic difference in my mind, so I tried a different vowel, and I came up with Gien. And I thought, well, that sounds good. That's balanced with the with Doom. That sounds bassy, and in combination with the other names of the stroke. In the languages with which I'm familiar, there wasn't anything nasty being said with the combination of the syllables, because you have to be careful about that. And so then I thought, okay, I asked my students, and everybody thought that was a fine name for the bass stroke. And then I was going ahead and preparing to record my videos, and suddenly I nearly fell on the floor because I speak Greek fluently, and it would have been smart if I had been looking for a name for the bass stroke for the left hand, the non-dominant hand, to refer to the feminine principle. But I didn't look for it. I wasn't doing that. I was looking for a phonetic match. And suddenly I realized, oh my goodness, Gien is the root of the word woman in Greek language. For example, in English we have gynecology. In Greek language you pronounce it gynecologos because it comes from the word gynēka. And so, and also in other languages in the Middle East, it's a very similar kind of a word. It's related linguistically. So that's how I came up with the name Gien. And so when you play on the thin line frame drum or my diary, either one of them, when you play in a symmetrical manner and you can integrate now the Gien and the bass stroke with the non-dominant hand, you are literally drawing forth the capacities associated with the, in my case, since I'm right-handed and my left hand is my non-dominant hand. So the more I use my non-dominant hand, I'm drawing forth the capacities that are associated with the right brain hemisphere. So we are literally balancing our brain hemispheres. I mean, quite literally. This is not something kind of theoretical or something. It is quite literal. And the more, what I was saying earlier, the more we can use our non-dominant hand, I really believe very, very strongly that we are literally giving voice to the feminine principle and the sacred divine, because the left hand is associated with the feminine. And we are literally giving voice to that other side of the brain, and we are bringing into our literal day-to-day experience the balance between the feminine and the masculine. You know, we need both. We need both the masculine and the feminine. And I know in the feminist movement, maybe there was, you know, a little, the pendulum was swinging there, you know, in compensation and, you know, in reaction to all of the suppression of women and women's rights. But really, we need both. We need both men and women. If we're going to have children and, you know, and continue the race, we need both. And we need,
yep,
need both. We need both the linear thinking model, and we need the abstract. So I'm very,
absolutely,
very excited about this method of quite literally balancing both brain hemispheres and both hands.
Very awesome stuff, Rowan, and I'm so excited about Saturday night. We're going to have such fun. I'm so glad,
yeah,
we're doing this together. And so listen, before you go, will you tell listeners about your website and your drumming classes and whatever you have coming up, the rest of the year?
Sure. My website is rowanstorm.com, rowanstorm. com, and I have a series of drum circle and their Middle East drum classes, and in the first half, and in the second half I have a Middle East facilitated drum circle, because I want to introduce Middle Eastern rhythms and drums into the world, which are not that well known at this point. That happens one Saturday a month at the Levantine Cultural Center, which is in Los Angeles. And I am going to Malaysia at the end of May. I'm invited to teach a 2.5-day frame drum workshop in Malaysia. That's on my website, the information. That's part of the Drum Circle Facilitation Festival. And drum circle facilitators need to haul around a bunch of drums, and usually they use djembes, which are huge and heavy. So I'm invited there to really to promote people using frame drums because they're a whole lot easier to carry around and to play than they are, you know, the djembes are. I also teach at the Middle East Music and Dance Camp every summer, which is up in the Redwood Forest in Mendocino, California, which is a one-week extravaganza of Middle Eastern music and dance. It is just an extraordinary opportunity to really experience full-on all kinds of different music, Arabic, Turkish, Persian, some Greek, different kinds of dance, belly dance, and different kinds of regional folk dances from the Middle East that maybe people are not that familiar with but are very much a part of those cultures. And I have many other events coming up. I have a concert on the 26th of July with Middle Eastern traditional music, and that's all that. That's at the Levantine Cultural Center as well.
Which has wonderful food.
yes, they do. And that's going to be a carpet concert. That's one thing that I've also been pioneering in the our concept of furniture is actually quite modern in the earlier, you know, millennia we're talking about, people's homes probably didn't have a whole lot of furniture like we're used to today. So most of humanity, people have been sitting on the ground. And still in the Middle East, in many areas, even it's not a question of that they can't afford to buy furniture, because I've been in some very wealthy homes in the Middle East that their mode of living in their homes is that they sit on the floor. They bring out a cloth and they have their meals picnic style on the floor. Then they take it up and they bring a mattress out of the closet, and now it becomes a bedroom, and then they take that up, and then there's a business meeting in there, and then the kids come in and run around and play. And in one space, it becomes everything by just moving certain things around. So it's a very, very different way of living than how we have our lives in the Western world, where things are kind of cellular and the bedroom is always a bedroom and the living room is always a living room. So it's a carpet concert. I bring a bunch of carpets, and people have the chance to sit on the floor. We also have chairs, so people can sit on a chair if they're not comfortable sitting on the floor. And that's going to be with my first mentor in music, Sudan Baronian, who's from New York. And we'll play a mixture of traditional Middle Eastern music and jazz pieces. And I sing also. I play very many different kinds of hand drums from the Middle East, and I also sing in several languages, and I also do jazz singing. So
wow.
That program will be a combination of different traditional things and more contemporary compositions.
It all sounds so so provocative and delicious. You know, before I let you go, I found it really interesting when we were together a few weeks ago. You mentioned that corporations now are doing drum circles for their employees. Did you want to mention that? I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. Well, again, this is Arthur Hall's pioneering work with the facilitated drum circle. There is a discipline called organizational development, which you can get PhDs in, and that field is all about how to help large organizations be more effective. And often that means a corporation, and often their aim is to make more money. But it could be a nonprofit. There could be, you know, any large organization of human beings needs something to help them be productive. And that's a very, there are many things that they do in that field. And it turns out that the facilitated drum circle is an amazingly effective way to do exactly what the mission is of organizational development. So often large corporations will have like an annual meeting, or they'll have something where people from all over the world who work for that company, maybe they'll have a weekend meeting or something. And imagine people come in who don't know each other, and maybe they're a little stiff and they still have their suits and ties on, and you know, they're going around kind of like trying to meet people, but they're shy and everything like that. Well, you know, often what they do is start off a weekend like that with a facilitated drum circle. And then guess what? Everybody just kind of relaxes, and they discover each other through rhythm. And often it's the CEO of the corporation sitting next to the janitor, and they discover each other's humanity, and they're out of their hierarchical roles for a moment, and people just have an extraordinary different experience of one another in that setting, which translates into permanent change in the organization.
Wow.
So, by the way, I'm going to Malaysia through someone invited me who does drum circles in, you know, Malaysia, which is a very important business hub of all of Asia, and he does drum circles and other things as well in large corporations based in Asia.
Well, this is good stuff. Well, Rowan, before we say goodnight, is there anything else you wanted to share that maybe I haven't asked you?
I would like to mention something very briefly if I have a moment here. I would like to mention about women's work because I think that there's been some discussion about that, you know, the difference between men's work and women's work. I just want to bring out the point that women's work historically has always been associated with child raising because the men were off doing whatever they were doing, whether it be hunting or marauding or whatever they were doing, and the women always needed to stay near the home base because of children. And their work always needed to be interruptible because when the baby starts screaming, the mother needs to put her work down and go and attend to the child. So our agriculture is one of the things that was most likely invented by women more than 10,000 years ago in Southeast Asia and also in the Middle East. Pottery was probably an invention of women. Textiles definitely is a 99% of all textile production has been women's work, weaving and the preparation of the yarn and the string, and even the agriculture, growing the cotton and all this kind of thing. It's all women's work. Food production has always been women's primary work. It's not to say that men don't do these things, but because of the division of labor and what was appropriate for the community. And healing, by the way, I think women have been the original healers because of their caregiving. Women are the natural caregivers because they're mothers and they're caring for their children. And it's also been shown that there's a lot of evidence that shows that women might have been the originators of writing because in goddess-worshipping cultures back thousands of years ago, there have been tablets that have found associated with goddess and priestesses. So it's very possible that writing was invented by women as well. So the agriculture thing leads into the frame drum because women would be sifting grain as part of the agriculture. And imagine that the women are there with their children and the men might be off doing something else. And so the women are sifting grain together, which is a very rhythmic activity, and maybe to make the time go more easily and more to have a better time at it, maybe they sing, maybe they play they sift their grain rhythmically together so that they become entrained in the rhythm. And isn't that a much more fun way to do your work than to do it all by yourself? So then imagine when the winter comes and you finish doing your sifting and you remember, wow, that was really fun to be out there with my women friends. Why do we have to stop just because we're not sifting grain any longer for the winter? So it's not difficult to imagine that maybe they took a grain sieve and stretched an animal skin on the grain sieve and kept on with their rhythmic activities through the winter. And
wow.
One more quick thing that I want to also bring out is that in continuing and evolving from that ancient tradition, there are women's groups all over the Middle East that are still active and I believe have been actively, absolutely nonstop for thousands and thousands of years. And I have done research for example, in two different geographic regions, I'll speak about them in particular, and there are many other regions too, but from Uzbekistan and from the Balkans, which are geographically quite far away, I have evidence, and I mean, I've talked to people, I've interviewed people, and I've done research that the women's gatherings in those regions, also in Saudi Arabia and in all over the Middle East, all over this huge region, women get together like, you know, women do today, and they talk, and they sometimes they get drunk, and they tell dirty jokes, and they're exclusively women and possibly gay men. And the description of these gatherings is 99% exactly the same, which I think is just extraordinary. And maybe, and they have frame drums. They play frame drums in these gatherings, and maybe they play different kinds of frame drums, and they speak different languages, and they dance, and they tell stories, and they complain about their miserable lives and their husbands. And, you know, they get it out of their system, you know, because women in that part of the world, you know, they do a lot of work while the men sit and play backgammon or smoke and talk among themselves while the women are out in the fields working very, very hard. So they have a hard life. So they have these women's gatherings and they vent. And the frame drum is an integral part of these gatherings around a huge geographic region. I just think that is absolutely fascinating, and I really would like to very much to make a documentary of this. I would like to travel and go into those communities with the women and play with them and bring this information out into the world, because it's really not very many people know about this at all, and that these traditions are ongoing. They never stopped, and they are very alive and well.
Well, there's definitely, whether it be a documentary or a book, you definitely have a lot of information you have to share, Rowan, without a doubt. And you've been so lucky to be able to travel to these places and participate with these women of other cultures as well.
Yes, and I speak languages too, so that helps. I mean, I can go in and I speak Persian language and Greek language fluently, so... I speak a little bit of Turkish and some Arabic, not too much Arabic, but I am writing about these things, and I'm too busy with my career right now to sit down and just write. I'm busy doing other things, but yes, this information I will be sharing more about this very soon. Stand by.
Very good, very good. Well, listen, thank you so very much for sharing all of this tonight with us, and I am definitely looking forward to the fun we're going to have Saturday, and, you know, maybe some of my listeners will become some of the folks who will join your drum circles in Los Angeles at the Levantine Center.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Karen. It was a really honor to share with you this evening. Thank you so much, and I'm looking forward to Saturday.
Okay. All right.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
I think so. Okay. All right. Well, good night, and I'll see you soon.
Okay, Karen. Thank you so much. Bye for now.
Bye-bye. Well, listeners, I hope you found that interesting. I know I sure did. And, you know, maybe you've been thinking about the drum, and tonight we've inspired you to take the next step, to maybe go to a class or, you know, buy an inexpensive drum and start drumming with both your hands. So I do have something to share with you from Joe Carson. Here it is.
The psychic state of the collective unconscious, which is that consciousness of the planet. It's called the chthonic mind, the mind of the earth.
Our ancestors understood that the animal and divine were all connected. They were together, that there wasn't a separation. And that's what we are trying to return to, is that sense that our animal nature is divine. It doesn't get in the way of the divine. It gets us closer to it.
What's your idea of being fully alive as a human being? Because that's what's really spiritual. Write it down. Start writing your own Bible if you want.
Sex is sacred. And by that, I just mean sweaty, fun, happy sex.
Well, that's a little snippet from Dancing with Gaia, and you can find out more about the DVD and the book that comes with it at dancingwithgaia.com. It's only $20, and lots of wonderful information there. I've actually seen the DVD and can definitely endorse it. And I want to thank Jo Carson for running her commercials for Dancing with Gaia on the show, because the small fee she pays does help me pay to keep Voices of the Sacred Feminine on the air. And I want to take a moment to shout out to Jacinta, the author of Different But Perfect. She is one of my listeners from Norway, and she sent me a Facebook message today, and she said, "Dear Miss Karen, I want to thank you for your radio show, especially the episode I recently listened to, the one about Pope Joan. I'd heard of her through National Geographic segments a while ago, and Donna's novel is now on my Amazon wish list. I come from a Catholic background, so I find this particularly interesting. As of now, there are no goddess temples here in Norway, and only goddess knows if there ever will be one. Once again, thank you so much for your show. I just re-released my own life story where I talk briefly about how goddess came into my life. I wish you and your loved ones a blessed Easter." So yeah, her book is Different But Perfect. So thank you so much, Jacinta. I love hearing from listeners. It means a whole lot. And I want to share with you some of the bees buzzing around in my bonnet tonight. Yep, there are those bees. And that's usually where women in the world are either suffering from misogyny or, you know, maybe they're being empowered. Well, tonight, my friend Pat, who is a longtime listener, she sent me some links to some items, and these were from the Daily Beast. Some good news, a judge in North Dakota ends an abortion law. On Wednesday, a federal judge overturned North Dakota's law banning abortions after detection of a fetal heartbeat. At as early as 6 weeks, a fetal heartbeat may be detected, but that is also before many women even know they are pregnant. U.S. District Judge Daniel Hovland said the law was invalid and unconstitutional and cannot withstand a constitutional challenge. This was one of the four anti-abortion measures that Republican Governor Jack Dorlemple signed into law last year. The state's only abortion clinic, which is in Fargo, filed a suit against the fetal heartbeat law. So we know there have been a lot of laws across all of these red states denying women their constitutional right to their reproductive health, but sometimes we win and they lose. Because it's really important to understand, you know, not that anyone's being callous about abortion. I really don't think most women use abortion as a form of birth control. That's just, right-wing propaganda. And if a woman can't control her reproductive health, then she can't control the economics of her household. She can't control, her education. It's this idea, of being barefoot and pregnant. You are really at the mercy of your body. You're at the mercy of this 9-month period in which you are carrying that baby, and after the baby is born as well. Women should be able to control whether they're going to be a mother. You know, only they know if they can afford the baby, if now's the right time. No state, no church. No men should tell women what to do with their body. It's just that simple. So there's one victory. Also another article, and I'm interested in this because I've interviewed women who have escaped that extremist right-wing fundamentalist quiverful movement. And you've probably heard of the Duggars or Duggars. They're that family that's on TV with with more than a dozen kids. Well, if you go to the Daily Beast, there's a headline that says, "Sex Scandal Rocks the Duggars Christian Patriarchy Movement. The far-right Christian patriarchy brought to America audiences by the Duggar family is on the verge of collapse after a series of alleged sex scandals involving the movement's leaders." And there's some really interesting stuff in that article about how they see women and the role of women. I know one of the women I had on the show said that women were really no more than breeders. In fact, when a woman reaches the point where it's no longer safe for her to have a baby, they're told, well, you'll die a martyr for Christ. You know, so what? Anyway, I'll just read the very end of this this article. It said, the pitch of biblical patriarchy, as epitomized by Michelle Duggar, is that women will be coddled and worshipped in exchange for giving up their ambition and the autonomy to practice an extreme form of female submission. The unpleasant truth is that a culture that teaches that women are put on earth for no other purpose but to serve men is not going to breed respect for women. Instead, these incidents show a world where men believe they can do whatever they want to women without repercussions. Is it any surprise that a subculture that promises absolute control over women will attract men who want to dominate and hurt women? Don't believe the TLC hype. Biblical patriarchy is a sour, dangerous world for women, and luckily that reality is finally being outed. And I think the author of this article is Amanda Marcotte. So you can read it all at the Daily Beast. It's really sad. I can't go into detail with the whole article, but you might want to read it for yourself. So next week we have Betsy Chase, producer of the movie What the Bleep Do We Know. She'll be with us discussing the movie and her book, Tipping Sacred Cows. I just love that title, don't you? I think we do that. We are into Tipping Sacred Cows. And on the last Wednesday of the month, Alexis Martin will be on the show talking about goddess artifacts from Malta. So April continues to be a good month, and please, please don't miss my last few shows. That one I mentioned earlier when I was chatting with Kathy Pagano, the interview with Foremother Anne Baring, that's a don't miss for sure. And then there was Saffron Rossi, who edited Joseph Campbell's only book on goddesses. She revealed some new stuff you probably don't know, so you won't want to miss it. I think you'll be sorry if you do, so tune in. And did I tell you, did you hear, I have a fourth book coming out in the fall. Yes, it is my first anthology, and radio show listeners I think will be most interested in this, maybe in particular. It's a collection of essays and transcripts from some of the top-tier guests who have been on Voices of the Sacred Feminine over the last 10 years, like Noam Chomsky, Rhianne Eisler, Father Roy Bourgeois, Starhawk, Joan Marler, Selena Fox, Laura Flanders, and many, many more. So, you know, when the time comes, I'll tell you when you can buy it. And speaking of books, I know you've maybe heard before, but let me remind you, my new book, Goddess Calling, is out. And Amazon has it for sale at a discount price of $12 and a bit of change. Ebooks are only about $7. So if you love Voices of the Sacred Feminine and you really want to help me, do me a favor, please buy my book, Goddess Calling, Inspirational Messages and Meditations of Sacred Feminine Liberation Theology. I have been getting great reviews. And you know what? It is about how Goddess liberates us and sets us free from patriarchy. Yes, indeed. So I hope you'll go online and purchase it, and please write a review. I still don't have anyone reviewing it on Goodreads, and I could use some great reviews there. And don't forget to take advantage of the free spring meditations on my website. Go to KarenTate.com, go to the Goddess Store page, scroll down, and there they are. And I guess in closing, let me just say have a wonderful Easter or Ostara this weekend. One of those meditations is about just that, so you might want to play it for you and your friends and enjoy it this weekend. Get outside and enjoy our beloved Mother Nature. Feel her sacred embrace. And remember, if you're in Southern California, please come to my big free bash at the Goddess Temple of Orange County. So I'm going to close tonight with a really funny song by Celia. I keep forgetting I have these, and they're really just so funny. So hang on while I get down to it. Hang on. Just take a minute. And here's one called the Hoo Hoo Song. And it's from her Naughty in Pink album, The Hoo Hoo Song by Celia.
Dr. Bronner's makes your hoo-hoo tingle. Ladies, you know what I mean. Do-do-do-do. You can always tell the folks that use it. There's a smile on their face and they always smell clean. Don't let them tell you that it's not okay. It's personal hygiene and oh, by the way. Dr. Bronner's makes your hoo-hoo tingle. Ladies, you know what I mean. I'll get the Dr. Bronner's and you go get the wine. Meet up in the bathtub and have a real good time. I'll scrub away your sorrows, you promise all my pain. Let's meet back here tomorrow and do it all again. Do, 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 do. Dr. Bronner makes your hoo-hoo tingle. I use it every time I get the chance. Do, 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 do. Dr. Bronner makes your hoo-hoo tingle. It feels like a peppermint patty in your pants. Don't let them tell you that it's not okay. Personal hygiene, and oh, by the way, Dr. Bronner's makes your hoo-hoo tingle. Ladies, you know what I mean. I'll get the Dr. Bronner's, and you go get the beer. Let's meet up in the bathtub, let's stay there for a year. I'll lather you with laughter, you clip my fingernails. Let's meet back here tomorrow, and forget all my travails. Do, 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 do. Dr. Bronner makes your hoo-hoo tingle, makes you smell all fresh and clean. Do, 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 do. Dr. Bronner makes your hoo-hoo tingle, it feels like your hoo-hoo just licked Listerine. Don't let him tell you that it's not okay, it's personal hygiene and oh, by the way. Dr. Bronner makes your hoo-hoo tingle, ladies, you know what I mean. I'll get the Dr. Bronner and you go get the tea. Meet up in the bathtub and have a scrubbing spree. Your skin will start to pucker, my toes will start to prune. But when can you meet again, dear? I hope it will be soon. Do, 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 do. Dr. Bronner makes your hoo-hoo tingle. Showering was never more fun. Do, 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 do. Dr. Bronner makes your hoo-hoo tingle. If you read the label, it says we're all one. Don't let him tell you that it's not okay. It's personal hygiene and oh, by the way. Dr. Bronner makes your hoo-hoo tingle. Ladies, you know what I, ladies, you know what I wish I could show you, but ladies, you know what I mean.